Now, the Industrial Revolution. Now, when we... When we think of the Industrial Revolution, we always think of factories, Oliver Twist, Charles Dickens, Emile Zola. So we normally think immediately about about the 19th century. But I want to go back to the beginning. First of all, the Industrial Revolution is very, very long. In fact, it's probably not finished. We have at the moment still the Internet Revolution is still continuing. You can do things today with Internet that you couldn't do 2 years ago. Yeah, so in some ways it's continuing. But let's go right back to what we sometimes call the first Industrial Revolution. We call it the first Industrial Revolution because it is an acceleration of the economy. And to make it easier for you to understand, we sometimes call it the Industrial Revolution of banks and canals. Now, banks and canals don't sound very industrial, but they are extremely important in this period. Why banks and canals? Well, banks, because if you only have an individual, the money from one individual, it's difficult to build factories and organise the slave trade and have big things. So the invention of the bank, where a lot of people can put money together, makes the Industrial Revolution possible. But before talking about the banks, I want to talk about agriculture. Can I have everybody's name on here, please? Agriculture is the first revolution. First of all, the enclosures are accelerated. There are enclosures before, but the enclosures are... They are accelerated much faster. That means bigger farms, a lot of poor people, and bigger farms. Also, the marshes and the forests are all brought under cultivation. Les marais, tout ce qui est marais, tout ce qui est forêt, va devenir terre agricole assez rapidement dans l'espace de 50 ans. The agricultural revolution also includes new machines. A gentleman called James Small, Monsieur Petit, pas le Monsieur Petit des petits livres de Roger Hargreaves, un autre. James Small, he invents a new plow, a new iron, square cast iron plow. A plow, c'est une charrue. And he invents a new one. And this makes a big difference. Plow. Plow. A plow. Another gentleman called Jethro Tull. L'original Jethro Tull. Oui, le groupe de musique est nommé d'après lui. And he invents a seed drill. Je vous l'explique un peu en français. Le vieux méthode de semer, c'était de prendre un gros sac de graines et de faire comme ça. C'est pas très efficace. Okay? And Jethro Tull invents a machine made of wood. You put some grains in here and you push it into the ground. And very, very simple. But very effective. And so the quality of the agriculture is getting better and better. And finally, there is a threshing machine, the invention of a threshing machine. C'est une machine pour battre le blé. Avant, on le faisait avec des bâtons. Hein? Tout le monde se met ensemble pendant 3 jours et on bat le blé. Hein? okay? And the threshing machine very often works by water power. Yeah, you put it near the river, the water, there is no steam, il n'y a pas de vapeur pour l'instant. Ça va venir juste après, à la limite de la deuxième révolution industrielle. Il n'y a pas de vapeur. La première révolution industrielle se fait avec l'eau. Il y a les rivières qui font tourner des grosses roues, etc. Okay, what else do we see in the agriculture? First of all, there is more science of agriculture. They invent the fourfold rotation. Je sais que vous n'êtes pas plus agriculteur que moi, mais on me dit que si on choisit bien l'ordre des récoltes, c'est beaucoup mieux pour la terre. Voilà. And so they invented this new idea of a fourfold rotation of crops. Because if you have land, if you plant wheat every year, after 15 years, your land is no use. That's bad agriculture. This is good agriculture. The first year you put wheat, the second year barley, c'est l'orge. The third year turnips, ce sont des navets. And the fourth year clover, that is to say, grass for the cows or for the goats. This is a good, if you're stuck with a farm, this is good. This is how to do it. This is the correct way to do it. The reason is that the different plants need different things from the soil. So they do not take all the nitrogen or all the potassium. And so this is science. It was necessary to invent it. And there are more and more books about how to farm successfully. One of the famous writers, Arthur Young. Arthur Young, he wrote books, The Best Way to Farm. Yeah, Arthur Young. So you can see we have a new society, really. The old traditional society. Oh, we produce enough for the village. Yeah. So if you use a scientific method, you can produce five times more. Five times more, why? We produce enough for the village. The traditional method. If I have a problem, oh, what did my grandfather do? What does the magician say? Yeah, magic, very important. The new method, big farms, this doesn't work very... I need some books about farming. Yeah, very modern, new idea. Yeah. When you have a big farm, then you can use machines and you can find people who read books. And so on. This is the new society coming into production. And already, English agriculture is much more efficient than French, Italian, Spanish, who are still in the traditional, very small farms, very traditional methods. En Espagne, en Italie, à cette époque, les problèmes agricoles, la solution, c'est de prier. Science. Alors, j'ai rien contre prier pour ceux qui y croient, mais bon, c'est pas mal de lire des livres sur l'agriculture aussi. Okay, so that's the agriculture side of it. The changes in agriculture mean there is more food, etc. But of course, if you produce more food, you need transport. If you produce 10 times more wheat than my father made. Yeah. If you can't transport it, then it's no use. So we will look in a moment at transports. But first of all, then, the results of the improving agriculture. The population of England is rising very rapidly. Over 100 years, you move from 5.5 million to 9 million people. This is... So, because there are more people, they need more food. Because the farms are bigger, they need more technology, more metal tools, more iron production, etc. And this is the configuration which gives us the basis for the Industrial Revolution. And we sometimes say, for the Industrial Revolutions, you need the four M's. The four M's, you have any idea what they are? Machines. Any ideas? Motivation, I like that, motivation. That's a very Protestant view of the world, the motivation. It's true, you need motivation, but I was thinking of something more concrete. Money? Means of communication, and of course men and women. You need machines? We will come back to the question of machines. But machines in agriculture and in industry are essential to the Industrial Revolution. Money? Yeah? If you want to build, on viendra au canot, dans un instant, you can imagine, if you build a canal 100 miles long, it costs a lot of money. So you need the banks and so on. Means of communication, donc ça justement, c'est les canaux, essentiellement les canaux, à cette époque. And of course, men and women. The population is rising, and many of the people in the countryside now have no land, and so they are available to go and work in the towns. Let's look at the one at a time. Machines. Let's have a little section on machines. As I said, most of these machines are run by human beings or by water. These are the two big origins of power. You also have horses. You know the horses, they vous attachez le cheval et il fait des cercles toute la journée. Yeah. They were not very nice to their animals at the time. So let's have a look at some of the machines. There was an invention in the 1730s of the flying shuttle, la navette pour le textile. What does that mean? Well, it means here you have the thread going this way, and you have to thread the thread going that way. The old method. This is the old method, okay? And the new method is you press a pedal and the threads move and you press another pedal. That's a flying shuttle. It's a very good idea. Okay, so the flying shuttle made textile much more weaving. Donc la tisserage. Le fait de tisser, en tout cas, much more efficient. Now, this is not independent. If you have more people and more transport, so you need more textiles, so you invent something. Deux siècles avant, quelqu'un l'aurait inventé. Qu'est-ce qu'il aurait fait avec? Il aurait travaillé trois jours par semaine au lieu de six. Mais il n'aurait pas produit plus parce qu'il produit pour son village. Alors. Yeah, there was no motivation. Thank you. No motivation to go any further. So this is the flying shuttle. We have more. Spinning Jenny. Vous allez devenir des experts en textile. Now this is interesting because with the flying shuttle, you could make a lot more textiles from the thread. Le problème, il y avait jamais assez de fil pour faire les textiles parce que le tissage allait tellement plus vite. And so there was a motivation to introduce a new machine which makes it quicker to spin. Alors, spin, c'est quand vous commencez avec le coton ou la laine et vous finissez avec un fil. C'est ça, spin. OK, c'est filé. Fabriquer du fil. The flying tessel, c'est avec le flying shuttle, on commence avec du fil pour fabriquer des textiles. Et là, on commence avec la matière première pour fabriquer du fil. So, the spinning jenny, I'm not going to explain to you how it works, but with a spinning jenny, instead of spinning three or four threads, you can spin 80 threads at once. C'est plus que... on peut filer 80 fils en même temps. Je ne vous montre pas. Hein. J'essaie de trouver un vidéo sur YouTube. OK. Avec la musique. Shortly afterwards. The water frame. Alors, the water frame, c'est dock automatique. The water frame, from the power of water, will make you textile without working. The man is a supervisor. Yeah? It's a real machine. It's a real machine. It makes textile automatically. Okay. There are 30, 40, 50 new inventions. Yeah, I give you three examples because they're very important examples. I'm not going to give you 50 new inventions because it's too much. Yeah? But these are just examples. This is a period when we have new inventions. And we don't have new inventions because the people are more intelligent. They're not more intelligent or less intelligent. It's just they have a reason to invent something new because there is more demand and because there is more transport. And it's possible to do something. And as you can see, the most important industry is cotton and wool. La laine et le coton. Alors, la laine et le coton, ce sont des substances aujourd'hui on ne trouve pas si intéressant que ça. Il faut vivre à l'époque et porter les mêmes vêtements pendant plusieurs années de suite. On les lavant tous les 15 jours pour voir l'intérêt du coton. Cotton is easy to clean. It's extremely important for your health. If you can clean your clothes easily, then you live longer. It's just as simple as that. Yeah, because the old method was very 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 dirty. People were very very dirty and very ill. Aussi, ils comprenaient pas ce que c'était les microbes. Ça ne savait pas. Yeah, so the cotton is really going to transform people's lives. It's not the only industry. Another important industry is the iron industry. And the iron industry will rise in England. And in France and in Italy and in Germany, you say, oh, wow, what's happening in England? It's completely new. Everybody is amazed. England is the leader of the world. Ça va pas dire, ne vous en faites pas. But this is the time when England is the leader of the world. And here are some of the pour produire du fer. Après 1709, au lieu d'utiliser le charbon de bois, ils utilisent du charbon miné. Miné comme dans les mines normalement, quoi. This is a new idea. It is much hotter and much more effective. And the iron tools which you produce are much stronger. So this is one of the examples. And in 1769... you have the invention of the steam engine. Alors les Français et les Anglais se battent sur qui c'était qui a inventé le moteur à vapeur. Les Anglais disent que c'est un Écossais, les Français disent que c'est un Français. Il n'y a personne qui monte dans l'histoire, c'est simplement que chaque personne rajoute une petite amélioration et définir lequel est l'amélioration décisive, c'est une question d'opinion. Et donc le nationalisme peut y entrer. But 1769, the steam engine. Okay, so we have agriculture improving, the textile industry improving, the iron industry improving. Alors évidemment, donc on ouvre beaucoup de plus de mines. Parce qu'il y a la demande pour le charbon maintenant. A lot more miners. Let's have a look at a second element here. Let's have a look at the element of money. In 1750, in London, there are 10 banks in London in 1750. In 1783, there are 400 banks. See, the number of institutions dealing with money in London is rising very quickly. Of course, the banks are not for the ordinary people. The banks are, if you want to establish a factory or build a canal, yeah, you want a lot of money, then you have the banks necessary. The banking system, a system of credits, establishment of the interest rates, etc. All the organisation which you need to invest. Now, all of this change, the textiles, the iron industry, the banks, you must not think that this is steady progress, organisation, things are getting more sophisticated. C'est le bordel total. Yeah? Absolute chaos, but there is a general progress. So many people open banks and then they lose all their money and they start again and somebody else accidentally. There's a lot of accident, there's a lot of chaos involved. And of course, je vous ai cité trois des grandes inventions. Je pourrais vous en citer 20 qui n'ont pas marché. They're not magic. We remember the ones which worked, but a lot of them were completely crazy ideas which didn't work. It's a totally chaotic sort of situation. Let's have a look at the third one, the means of communication. Because if you make a lot of textile, if you make a lot of coal, you make a lot of food, that's not very useful if you can't move it. Yeah, I have enough food to feed 20 million people, but I can't transport it. It's no use at all. So transport is at the centre of the Industrial Revolution. And here, this is one of the reasons why England is the first. England has a big advantage over France. Can you imagine what is the big advantage of England over France?
It's an island.
It's an island. Now, Australia is an island as well. It's a small island, yeah? Yeah. Why is this an advantage?
Because the sea is the main means of communication.
Yeah, yeah. It's, if you have a lot of products in Glasgow, and you want to take them to London, you put them on a ship, of course. Yeah. The roads are very, very bad. But Marseille, if you have things in Marseille and you want to bring them to Paris, yes, it's much more difficult. Yeah. It is an advantage to be a small island. The sea is never very far away when you're in England.
Aussi les fleuves sont très bons en Angleterre parce qu'il pleut tout le temps.
Okay, this is also a great advantage. But the most important thing is that the sea is not very far away. And so when you begin to build canals, des canaux, it's not very far. You build a canal to the sea and then you go around the island. A very, very important change. Of course, we still need roads. I want to look at roads and then canals.
Notez bien, on est encore dans la première industrielle révolution.
1760 to 1820. Alors les chemins de fer, c'est pas encore, c'est plus tard.
Ne forcez pas au train, c'est pas encore.
Ok?
Parce que parfois les gens, ils les mettent dans le mauvais ordre. D'ailleurs, parfois, c'est trop tard maintenant, je vous ai donné la réponse, mais parfois je demande à mes étudiants, est-ce que c'est les canaux inventés avant les chemins de fer ou l'inverse? Et parfois, ils ont du mal. Parce qu'en fait, vous imaginez, vous devez ou bien construire un chemin de fer de 100 mètres, ou bien un canal. C'est le chemin de fer, non? C'est un peu plus facile. Il n'y a pas d'eau dans l'histoire, il faut ça. Donc, évidemment, une fois qu'ils ont le chemin de fer, personne ne va s'amuser à inventer un canal. C'est complètement nul. OK, so first of all, roads. Now, the roads were very bad. In 1700, the roads were very bad indeed. First of all, there were terrible problems with crime.
Yeah, les bandits de haut chemin, bon, bien sûr, on a tous les films de cap et épée,
but it was really dangerous, yeah? Yeah?
Your money or your life,
etc. Real problem of crime. And the roads in England were even worse than the roads in France. So, for example, if you wanted to go from London to Edinburgh, 3 weeks. Okay, that's quite a long way. And the problem they had is that the roads were the responsibility. Quand je dis roads, en fait, je ne sais pas comment l'expliquer, c'est vraiment... c'est un peu des marais très longues, quoi. There was no maintenance. The reason was, every village, or every parish, en fait, c'est des paroisses, every parish was responsible for the roads inside the parish. The village. So, like, inside a little village... You are responsible for the roads in the village. Now, the roads outside the village, so we need some money to maintain the road between your village and the big town.
On n'y va jamais, pourquoi on va payer pour les routes?
Nobody wanted to pay to maintain the roads, to make the roads better, because travelling outside your village was an exceptional experience that you didn't do. And this was solved by a new system introduced by the Parliament, turnpike system. And it's very, very simple idea. For example, let's take the road from London to Norwich. You must be responsible for improving the road from London to Norwich. But everybody who goes past on the road must give you €3. Okay? So it's a privatisation of the roads.
Comment on fait aujourd'hui pour les autoroutes en France, pas en Angleterre, mais en France.
Okay, so the turnpikes is a law passed by the Parliament, and this law says the road between London and Norwich must be maintained by Mr. Smith, and he can receive money from everybody who goes past the road.
Alors, puisqu'avant, personne n'entretenait les routes, c'est une amélioration, même s'il fallait payer.
Now, most people did not use these roads. The poor people did not use the roads.
Tout comme quand on n'a pas de fric en France, on évite les autoroutes, on prend les petites routes. À l'époque, les pauvres, ils traversaient les champs parce qu'ils ne voulaient pas payer pour la route.
Yeah, it wasn't an improvement for everybody, but the roads became much better. Between 1700 and 1750, the Parliament passed 400 road acts, and between 1750 and 1790,
Donc, entre 1700 et 1750, il y avait 400 lois votées au Parlement, chacun dans ce genre-là. Cette route-là appartient à machin qui peut faire payer.
And in the next 40 years, 600.
Alors, ce sont des statistiques intéressantes, parce que là, vous voyez que c'est une période de 50 ans, et là, c'est une période de 40 ans. Pourquoi je n'ai pas fait le calcul jusqu'à 1800, parce que quand on est historien, on se rend compte que les 9 dixièmes de tous les documents et tous les stats ont disparu. Et on fait ce qu'on peut avec ce qui reste.
Et alors, il se trouve qu'en 1790, on a un bon comptage, et 10 ans plus tard, on n'a pas de bon comptage. Alors, c'est ça l'histoire. On fait avec ce qui nous reste, qui est un petit bout de ce qu'il y avait. Okay, so the result is that the roads are improving, and especially the roads between the bigger towns, entre les ports et les marchés. Par exemple, à Cambridge, c'est le centre d'une région agricole, et la route entre Cambridge et le port qui permet d'exporter le blé, for example, that would be better. Okay, so roads, means of communication roads, the roads are improved because of the turnpike system. The advantage is somebody improves the roads. The disadvantage is you have to pay to use the road. Yeah, it's life. Yeah. And because the roads are better, then you can transport your goods more. Ah, I make a ton of textiles every year, but with the new roads, it's very easy to go to these towns. Maybe I should make more textiles. I could sell more. Can you invent a machine to make me make more textiles? Yeah, the whole dynamic goes together: better transport, better invention, better machines, more population. It all goes together. Let's have a look at this second idea, the canals. Now, if you have a ton of coal and you have to choose, you can transport it with a horse and a cart or with a boat on a canal. You can see it's much easier on a canal. What was the method of locomotion on the canal? How did the boats move on the canal? They didn't move. Ah, vous savez, c'est bien, vous avez inventé des canaux et des bateaux, mais vous ne savez pas les faire bouger. How do you make the boat move? Say again. Now, in fact, it's a good idea, but you cannot make a boat move with coal until you have a steam engine. Seulement une fois qu'il y a le moteur à vapeur. Mais il n'y en a pas encore. For the first canals, there was no steam engine, no steam power, not yet. That was later, of course. So what can you do? Swim, attach children and swim. It's a good idea. No. Okay. Comment ça s'appelle le chemin juste à côté d'un canal? Le chemin de? Qui commence par H? C'était plus facile quand j'enseignais ce cours dans le sud-ouest à Agen, parce que c'était des gens de la campagne. Ça s'appelle le chemin de halage. Voilà, j'arrête. Ils utilisaient des chevaux. Alors, le chevaux, il marche à côté et il tire le bateau. La péniche, il tire la péniche. Alors, vous avez bien fait de mettre au XXe siècle parce que vous auriez été nuls. OK, yeah. So, initially, the canals are boats pulled by horses. But, as I think you can imagine quite easily, a horse with a boat can pull a lot more coal than a horse with a cart. Ça vous semble logique? C'est-à-dire qu'on peut tirer, même une personne peut tirer un bateau vachement lourd. Parce que l'eau, c'est tellement bien pour porter. Okay, good, right. And so, the development of canals. And the first one the most prestigious one, 1792, London to Oxford. Donc le canal entre Londres et Oxford en 1792. Alors vous avez peut-être remarqué qu'en 1792, c'est après l'invention du moteur à vapeur, mais à l'époque, entre l'invention et la production, souvent c'est 50 ans. C'est pas comme aujourd'hui. Ok, that's one of them. J'en ai pas d'autres. Yeah.
1777. And these canals were extremely popular with industrialists and agriculturalists.
Tout simplement parce que c'était 10 fois moins cher, tout d'un coup. Alors, depuis des générations, ça vous coûte un penny par mile pour transporter votre... Et tout d'un coup, c'est 10 fois moins. That's the reason that we, when we use the word revolution, it's not an exaggeration. Really, things change very, very quickly. Okay. Finally, then, the last one. Men and women. Now, I don't just mean the number of men and women. Of course, you need a lot of men and women to build a canal. This is mostly men building the canals, a lot of Irish people. But also, you need men and women entrepreneurs. You need the capitalists, the ones who have the new ideas at this time. And these people are often dissenters. That is to say, they are members of minority religions. There is a reason for this. If you want to be a lawyer or a doctor or a university teacher or a priest or a judge, you must be Church of England. If you are a dissenter, a Puritan, not in the Church of England, you cannot be a lawyer, you cannot be a judge, you cannot be... You know, so many of the professions, there is no space for you. And therefore, if you have some money and you want to make money, then industry is a possibility. Some of these people, there are many, many people, some of these people are famous. Josiah Wedgwood, for example. Est-ce que vous avez vu ce nom de famille Wedgwood? Ça vous dit quelque chose? Il est connu pour les céramiques. Si vous allez au Louvre, section céramique, il y a beaucoup de trucs de lui. OK. Josiah Wedgwood was an example. So, what did this look like in figures? Well, we have some figures on the import of cotton. Peut-être vous vous rappelez, le coton, ça ne pousse pas en Angleterre, ça pousse dans des endroits chauds. Voilà. Alors, nous avons les chiffres sur l'importation du coton, d'une matière première, et alors ça nous donne une idée sur, parce que tout ce qui était importé était traité dans les textiles. Alors, on a l'idée ici. In 1780, 3,200 tons of cotton were imported into Britain, into England. That is to say, 3,200 tons of cotton were made into textiles. In 1810, 30 years later, it's not 3,000 tons, it's 65,000 tons. So you can see, in 30 years, ce sont des chiffres similaires au nombre d'ordinateurs dans les foyers en France sur 30 ans. Il y a 30 ans, en 1980, donc, qui avait un ordinateur à la maison? Il y en avait, hein, mais... It's exactly the same situation, different century. So, that's cotton. I also have a little bit more statistics from iron. in 1788, 68,000 tons of iron were produced. And in 1806, 250,000 tons of iron were produced. So we have a rapid acceleration of change. Now, society has always changed, but the change is faster in the Industrial Revolution. And we get the introduction of new industries. For example, the pottery industry. La céramique devient industrielle. La poterie, ça devient industrielle. Becomes very important. And chemical industries. Because we have more and more textiles, people want more different colours, and the dyes, la teinturerie, becomes an extremely important industry. Sorry?
What did you say? Chemical.
La chimique, l'industrie chimique. Yeah, chemicals. Okay, so this is the big change in the economy. More banks, more roads, more canals, more people, more factories, more textiles, more coal, more iron. More change in 40, 50 years than in a long time previously. Et les gens, ils se retrouvaient vraiment, ah oui, mon grand-père, la vie de mon grand-père ressemblait à la vie de mon arrière-grand-père qui ressemblait à la vie de son père, mais plus maintenant. Yeah, everything will change very quickly. Now, of course, this has positive sides because there is more. So people begin to have a more interesting and better life. But not everybody. And I want to look at a couple of episodes of resistance to changes. And in particular, this revolt, the Luddites. Vous avez déjà vu le mot Luddites? Ça s'utilise des fois en français, mais seulement dans le monde diplomatique. Alors, c'est pour ça. Okay, the Luddites. Now, the Luddites is just one example. This is just one example of resistance to the change. Because, of course, if you have more machines, that means more production. But it also means, of course, that people lose their jobs. And at this time, when people lost their jobs, they had nothing to eat. It's not like today. Today, in England or in France, unemployment is very serious. But in general, when you lose your job, you don't have to stop giving your children food immediately. So this is very, very big. And the Luddites in the 1811 are one example of resistance. Now, at this time, if poor people wanted to resist and make their conditions better, they didn't have a lot of choices. Today, you have three or four choices. You can vote for a better government. It might work. Yeah? You can organise a trade union and go on strike. It sometimes works. Yeah? You can use the law. Ah, monsieur, il y a une loi qui dit qu'il y a un SMIC. Vous ne pouvez pas payer beaucoup moins, c'est pas bon. So you have some options. It's not perfect, but you have some options. At this time, they cannot vote. They cannot organise a trade union. It's illegal. And so the only normal way of reacting is the riot. L'émeute, c'est la méthode de résistance. It's the only one which is available. And one of the historians identifies the situation as collective bargaining by riots. I will explain what this means in a moment. This is my favourite historian.
S'il y a des gens qui s'intéressent à l'histoire, vous ne savez pas ce que c'est avant de lire un de ces bouquins. Eric Hobsbawm, c'est la meilleure, c'est la meilleure. Collective bargaining by riot, ça veut dire simplement négociation collective à travers l'émeute. And it's a very, very simple thing. Yeah? You say to the landowner, we want higher wages. And he says no. Et la semaine suivante, il y a deux de ces granges qui brûlent. Personne ne sait de qui. Vous revenez, on veut une augmentation salariale. And this is the method. Yeah, the method. It's not a legal method, but it's the normal method. Of course, it's very dangerous. What happens if you are caught? Yeah. What happens if you are caught? Yeah. Yeah. But you are hung. You are executed. But when you're in a situation, you have no food to give your children. Yeah. People are in desperate situations, and very frequently, it was not unusual to see riots, especially when there was no food. In 1757, in 1766, in 1795, c'est pas très grave les dates exactes, mais régulièrement, there were riots when the situation was too desperate. Now, the Luddites is a specific example. What happens is that a group of textile workers worked at home. With the putting out system, they worked at home, and they made enough money to feed their families. And then a new machine arrived. And in many houses, there was a new machine in the boss's house, which was much faster. And there was no work left for the ordinary people. So what did they do? In the middle of the night, they disguise themselves and they go and break the machines. This is machine breaking. And they broke all the machines in the district, machine breaking. It was very successful. It was very popular. Le gouvernement offre des récompenses énormes pour savoir qui c'est et personne ne veut parler. Why at this time? Well, at this time, est-ce que vous avez en tête quand il a été défait pour la dernière fois Napoléon? Pardon? Oui, 1815. Alors, en 1811, l'armée britannique n'est pas en Angleterre. Elle est allée chercher les Français. C'est le moment parfait pour organiser une révolte. Okay, so at this time, they organized this machine breaking. And their leader was called General Ludd. Now, if you are leading an illegal movement and you are risking execution, do not give your real name. This is not the real name of the leader. In fact, this is an imaginary leader. In reality, the riots were organized separately, but they all wrote letters. They wrote letters. And we still have the letters. It says that. Yeah. We will destroy your machines. Signed, General Ludd. But it's an imaginary leader, General Ludd. The government was very upset. The government was very worried. And in 1812, they passed a new law which said, if you break a machine, you will be executed. Avant, on était exécuté pour une série de crimes, mais ils ont passé une loi spécifique qui dit, casser les machines, exécution. But they did have a problem. ils avaient quand même un système de tribunaux avec des jurés, et les jurés refusaient de les déclarer coupables.
In fact, the Luddites who broke the machines had a lot of popular support. But three of them were executed in Yorkshire. And a little later, in 1826, this is another revolt. It's not exactly the same. The Luddites were textile workers breaking machines because they were replacing their work. 15 years later, this is where I live. I lived in, when I was in England, there was a series of machine-breaking riots in Accrington. Thousands of people involved. A crowd of 20,000 people, une foule de 20,000 personnes, went to break the machines in the textile factories. They went from town to town, and they went into the factories and broke the machines which were replacing the workers. In two towns, three towns, four towns, five towns. Yeah, they walked all night between the towns. And the government sent the army. But the soldiers refused to shoot. So a very high level of social tension when the army refused to shoot. That's very worrying for the government, of course. This continued for about... This continued for about a week. 53 men and 12 women were arrested, and 35 men and 6 women were condemned to death. This is one. We have one of their documents, and this is what they wrote. We are starving now, and our children are famishing at home. We have nothing to eat and nothing to do. Speaking will fill no bellies. We will break looms, the machines. We will break looms, whatever the consequences. And if one half of us is shot, the other half will break looms. So you can see a large number of desperate people with no other options, and this situation where breaking the machines. Later on, I will talk about this another week, there will be more options. They will build a trade union movement. But at the beginning, in the first Industrial Revolution, before 1830, there really is no other option. Ok, il reste 7 minutes, mais je ne veux pas commencer une nouvelle période, alors je vais arrêter là pour aujourd'hui. J'ai encore 4 copies là. Laquelle vous voulez? Vous êtes sûr? Eh oui, après je vous là. Okay. So just let me, could you just write down next to your name? Because otherwise I will take lots of marks off you because you didn't do the test. But in fact you weren't supposed to. Le problème, c'est que...
pas sur ma liste, vous êtes sur la liste des questions d'autres. Par contre, je veux bien me renseigner au plus cher. Alors, rappelez-moi le deuxième. Ben non, tu vas dire si c'est la famille.
Mais moi, je pense que. Il y a la passerelle et bien. Et donc, c'est sur les deux.
Je me renseigne aussi. Et si vous êtes déjà sur notre liste, je reste. Mais sinon, bien sûr, je fais rendez-vous avec vous. Vous ne voulez pas oublier quelque chose.
Je voulais voir parce qu'en fait, j'étais voir Madame Dosier des Relations Internationales et elle m'a dit de m'adresser à vous parce que oui. J'aimerais bien essayer de partir avec l'accord interministériel
de l'Europe. Oui. Alors, OK. Alors, je vais noter ça quelque part. Est-ce que ça vous embête de m'envoyer un mail? Comme ça, c'est sûr que je trouve l'information au bon endroit. Alors, je dois me renseigner. Je sais qu'en général, c'est plutôt en troisième année que les gens y vont. Ce qui...
Oui, mais elle m'a dit de justement.
Oui, voilà, ça ne peut pas arriver, c'est impossible. Alors, moi, je viens de prendre cette responsabilité. Il y a plein d'informations que je n'ai pas encore. Mais envoyez-moi un mail, comme ça, je l'ai. Vous avez mon.
D'accord.
Vous voulez que je vous laisse mon adresse?
Oui, je
vous donne. Oui, parce que comme ça, je l'ai au bon endroit, au bon moment. Et parce que je n'ose pas vous dire de l'écrire sur un petit bout de papier parce que je suis nul pour ça. Sinon, je ne vous le verrai jamais plus. Voilà, donc vous le répétez. Et moi de mon côté, je me renseigne si ça pose problème, en quelle année vous êtes. Donc, vous aimeriez bien y aller pendant toute l'année prochaine.
Oui, voilà. Donc, elle m'a dit que ce n'était pas sûr qu'en deuxième année. Donc,
oui, voilà. C'est. Et moi, je ne sais pas non plus, mais je saurais parce que je sais qui demander.
Okay.
Ben, c'est une super, super idée de toute façon. Espérons que ça peut. Dites-moi, jeune homme.
Et pour contrôle un peu pour l'inquiète, j'ai noté
les signes. Oui. Alors le problème, c'est, moi je n'ai pas compris. Ou bien vous êtes en régime dérogatoire.
J'ai demandé, j'attends
une
réponse.
Ah oui. Donc parce qu'il faudrait, hein, parce que. Si vous voulez, il y a deux solutions. Vous êtes en régime dérogatoire, il n'y a pas de problème, vous faites le test à la fin. Et sinon, c'est que vous avez zéro sur ce test. Il n'y a pas de troisième solution, vous voyez. Donc, je vous les ai écrits là. Mais bon, moi je pense qu'il n'y a pas de raison. Hein. Donc, le mieux, c'est que vous soyez en régime dérogatoire, mais que vous continuez à venir au cours et puis que vous écoutez ce que vous allez passer. Hein.
Bien sûr.
Voilà, bon courage.
Merci.
Justement,
qu'est-ce
qu'en général on considère comme un
intérieur? En général, c'est-à-dire
par exemple, quand j'ai fait des recherches sur Internet, on considérait comme un intérieur. Peut-être
un bah, c'est-à-dire que tout ce qui est royaliste ne l'aime pas trop.
Mm-hmm.
Parce que on fait exécuter le roi. L'attitude en Angleterre, tout ce qui est. Et, par contre, il y a plein de gens qui le défendent comme celui qui a rendu possible la fin de la monarchie absolue. Alors, c'est une question d'opinion. Hein, si, vous voulez. Bah, si tu veux, dictature, c'est sûr. Il n'y avait pas de démocratie sous Cromwell, mais il n'y en avait pas non plus ni sous le roi avant ni sous le roi après. Alors, ce n'est pas la bonne question de démocratie. C'est pas la bonne question. Alors, la question, c'est qui est. Question à l'époque, c'était plus difficile de fonder un dictateur traditionnel, roi, qui continue la traditionnalité. Est-ce qu'on veut une société plus moderne où le commerce commence à se développer? Oui, voilà. La démocratie n'est pas encore à l'ordre du jour.
D'accord, en fait, c'est dictateur dans le.
Oui, non, parce que les dictateurs aujourd'hui, c'est différent parce que c'est dictateur quand il y a d'autres possibilités, quand il est possible d'avoir un gouvernement démocratique.
Oui.
À l'époque, c'était pas trop possible. C'était vraiment les mouvements qui existaient, c'était entre différents types de domination. Après, c'est sûr que il y a la possibilité d'avoir différentes parties de la population, qui a pression, qui a un certain nombre de droits garantis, parce que sous le roi, il vous jette en prison, il vous pousse. Il n'y a même pas de procès. C'était ça l'ancien système. Alors le nouveau système après Cromwell et la Restauration, c'est quand même qu'il y a un certain nombre de droits.
C'est pas la démocratie. Mais il y a un certain nombre de choses. On a le droit à un jury quand on est accusé de quelque chose. Donc, c'est du point de progrès. Je ne veux pas dire que c'est démocrate. C'est pas. Oui, il faut nuancer. C'est un petit peu, un anachronisme comme accusation. Si vous voulez. C'est un peu comme si on disait que c'était un macho. À l'époque, personne ne pensait, hommes ou femmes, que les hommes et femmes étaient égaux. Alors c'est un peu idiot. Vous voyez, ce serait idiot de penser dans ces termes-là. C'était une autre réponse. Et ça, c'est toujours difficile de se mettre dans la. Ça a beaucoup joué, parce qu'au début, après la préparation, il est déterré, et tout un morceau. Mais, pas plus. Maintenant, il y a une statue de problème devant le Parlement. Alors, mais ça, c'est important, mais pas, c'est-à-dire, qui est mis en statue devant le Parlement, c'est héros. Pas n'importe qui, c'est pas un statut dans tout village. Et alors, d'un côté, et en fait, le statut, c'est très ambigu. Parce qu'il veut bien faire semblant que la monarchie, c'est une grande tradition, et il veut cacher le truc. À un moment, ils avaient le pouvoir, et puis on leur enlève tout le pouvoir, mais on garde le symbole, seulement. Alors, ils sont très ambigu, c'est pas une représentation très honnête. Oui, tout à fait. Donc l'establishment ne veut pas une monarchie avec plus de pouvoir, mais il veut une monarchie parce que ça montre à tout le monde que les anarchistes sont là, que les grands enfants, et tout ça. C'est complexe comme idée. Non, dans les universités, on a fait la chance. Oui, oh oui, je pense que les historiens, après, la presse conservatrice, c'est pas moi. Mais, non, quelqu'un qui étudie le système avant le 17e siècle, c'est comme la Révolution française. Il y a toujours un ou deux personnes pour dire une erreur là. Yes. Yeah, it worked better. Thank you. Did you get my mail about the Limoges?
They said in Limoges that would be great if you did this particular course.
Right.
No, so it's fine. Yeah.
All right.
Okay. I'm fundamentally asking you to work for 5 hours and be paid for 30.
Let me think about it.
I'll show you what it is. You will laugh. Oh, I'm on such an easy thing. But there you go, that's great.
Okay.
So it's in January, it has to happen. Basically, you have to spend like 5 minutes a day for
4 weeks. Okay. That's so you've got all the stuff, it's all online. It's all
yeah, yeah. The only thing you have to do is then at the end you then have to mock their work, right. Which is four exercises each, and I think there's 20 of them. Okay. But it's, yeah. So I'll have to ask you, I'll ask them to, I'll get you to give me your address in France so they can send you, you know, the usual dossier. Or
yeah,
but it's open and shut.
Okay.
And it suits me because then they don't bring in somebody, some hungry person.
Yeah. Okay. Fair enough.
Okay, see you.